American Art Auction, a first edition book auction, book raffles, and a free book giveaway. A book lover's dream come true. There's a small donation, and children under 10 will be admitted free of charge. Proceeds to benefit TALA, a nonprofit literary organization. For further information, call 212-714-5316. That's 212-714-5316.
Thank you for calling the New York Times. If you are calling from a touchtone telephone, please press 1 now. Otherwise, remain on the line, and a New York Times operator will assist you. Please hold while we transfer you to the operator.
Hi, is this the New York Times?
Yes, it is.
Is your website up?
I heard it was down for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what's going on?
I don't know, sir. They're closed, and I can't get an answer, but I could give you a phone number. Maybe their switchboard might have stayed open later.
Because I checked it, and there was all this, you know, this
I'm sorry, we have a bad connection. I can hardly hear you.
I just got all this indecency and sexually oriented stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the kind of stuff the New York Times prints.
No, not at all, sir. There is, like, we've been having trouble with hackers.
Uh-huh. Is one of their names Kevin Starr by chance?
I don't know the details.
Well, that's where I saw all the sexually explicit material, and I was just kind of concerned.
Yes, we're aware of the problem. I can give you the website's number if you want to inquire.
Okay, go ahead.
It's 597-8001.
Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
Good night.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bump, for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bump.
Well, we have a busy night ahead of us, don't we? A lot to talk about. This is Off the Hook, Emmanuel Goldstein with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
ever asked yourself who holds the key that winds up Big Ben?
And good evening to everybody. The program is off the hook, and we've got our hands full tonight with all kinds of news reports and updates. I'm sure everyone's heard about it by now. I'm sure you've all gotten the updates from every media source there is that the New York Times website got hacked on Sunday. Big time. Oh, boy. They didn't mess around this time, did they? And basically, even though this is something that I think might have gotten Kevin Mitnick a little bit angry or upset or frustrated, because everyone thinks that he did this, that he's somehow the mastermind behind the whole thing. Even with that, I think a lot of good has come out of it, and that people are starting to ask questions. I was looking around on the Kevin Mitnick website, www.kevinmitnick.com, looking at the stats page, and everybody can click on this if you go over to that site. On Saturday, we had 13,534 hits. That's just like a normal day. On Sunday, 62,582. And there's a little bar graph here, and it just kind of goes all the way across the page. It's really, really pretty wacky there. So, yeah, that's definitely a cause and effect. Now, of course, a lot of people were trying to access the website for sexually explicit material of a different nature. And they weren't able to get it there. They were able to get it in all kinds of other places, CNN, MSNBC, all the other places that had the Ken Starr report on there. So it wasn't really that much of an inconvenience to the public. However, the New York Times says it was a big inconvenience to them. Let me read you the article that showed up on their webpage once it finally came back up. A group calling for the release of an imprisoned computer hacker commandeered the New York Times site on the World Wide Web for several hours on Sunday. They commandeered it. They moved in there with tanks and troops. And what a bloody battle it was. The incident forced the newspaper's electronic edition to shut down at a time when traffic was particularly heavy because of Friday's release of the Whitewater Independent Council's report over the internet. You know, speaking of that report, I just want to point out two things here. Number one, that was indecent material by anyone's definition. I mean, I was shocked by some of the things that were being done with all kinds of objects and people and things that, you know, are alleged in that report. And the Republican Congress insisted that it be put on the net. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? They basically broke all their indecency rules and clauses and paranoia that they've been putting out for the last few years. So apparently when it suits them, it's okay. What the rest of us, we have to toe the line. And the other thing concerning this that I thought was really kind of amazing is that when the documents were released to brought by Kenneth Starr to the government, and locked up in that vault for 24 hours, they were already in HTML format. Yeah, they didn't do all this in one day. They didn't put it all in nice text format and for HTML. No, it was all that way to begin with. So what does that tell you? It tells you that they were ready for this. They knew it was going to be going up on the web, and that whole discussion where they sort of voted on it was kind of a formality. They knew exactly where it was going from the beginning. So I thought that was kind of interesting right there. Anyway, getting back to the story about the Times site. Instead of the Times opening screen, some visitors to the site early Sunday morning saw a logo marked HFG with images of nude women and a diatribe that included attacks on the Times' past coverage of the imprisoned hacker, Kevin Mitnick, who has been in jail since his arrest in February 1995. Except they don't say that he has not had any bail, he has not been on trial. Officials of the New York Times Electronic Media Company, the division of the company that handles operations on the web, shut down the site after the break-in was discovered, and didn't restore service until 7:35 p.m. after securing the site's computers. Joseph Velaquette, An FBI spokesman said the agency's New York-based computer crime squad had opened an investigation into the break-in. They're going to track these guys down. Martin Nissenholtz, president of the division, said late Sunday that the company did not yet know how the hacker organization HFG, or Hacking for Girlies, had breached its security, but he speculated that the attack was timed to coincide with the increased traffic to the site in the wake of the publication of the report by the Whitewater Independent Counsel Kenneth W. Starr. This is a much more destructive weekend to be doing this than normal, Nissenholtz said. We were running 35% above normal on Saturday, and typically Sunday is twice as big as Saturday. Well, it certainly was for the Kevin Mitnick site. The Times attack appears to be the first time the website of a major news organization has been penetrated by hackers. But computer security experts noted that attacks on high-profile targets are by no means rare. The approaching trial in January of Mitnick, who has been in jail since his arrest for parole violation and several federal felony counts in early 1995, also appears to have galvanized some members of the computer underground. The group that took over the Times site directed some of its comments at John Markoff, the Times reporter who covered Mitnick's arrest. Don't say anything about him helping to orchestrate his arrest, but I guess they'll cover that sometime in the future. Earlier this year, Yahoo, the biggest internet search engine site, was hacked by a group proclaiming its support for Mitnick. And this summer, the Hacker Magazine 2600 led a small protest outside the Manhattan offices of Miramax Films, which is producing a movie based on the book Takedown. Well, once the trial date comes closer, we're going to see a strengthened effort in hacking websites to get the Kevin Mitnick name known, predicted John Branisevich. Yeah, I said it right. Founder of Anti-Online, a website that tracks hacker activity. HFG buried additional comments within the source code of the page, the computer instructions that underlie the page. Those comments were less threatening, lacked the creative spellings, and included quotes from Tennyson, Emerson, and Voltaire. In case you don't know, those were hackers from centuries past. They also got in a lot of trouble. HFG also said they hacked the page because they were bored and wanted to make people laugh. The story made the front page of yesterday's New York Times, or actually a little pointer to another page. Hackers strike the Times. The New York Times shut down its webpage after computer hackers took control of the site, page A12. Funny thing is, it wasn't on page A12. I guess hackers moved it to page A18. Who knows? So we had articles in the New York Times about this. A bigger piece in today's Newsday. A tiny piece in yesterday's Newsday. A brief mention in the New York Post. Actually, no, a full-fledged article in the New York Post. And a very interesting story in the Daily News. Readers who logged on to the New York Times website yesterday, perhaps to read more details of Kenneth Starr's impeachment report, got something even more explicit on their computer screens. A group of hackers calling itself Hacking for Girls. They even got that wrong, didn't they? That wasn't the right name. Was it Hacking for Girlies or something like that? Yeah, this is daily news for you. Hacking for Girls took over the paper's website yesterday morning and posted pictures of nude women. Now, that's the other thing, okay? Everyone's saying this. Everyone's saying that there's obscenity and pornography on the site. There wasn't any pornography. In fact, Channel 4 showed the whole thing right on TV. They didn't even censor it. It basically had images that were sort of obscured. And if you used your imagination, you could imagine what they look like without clothing on, but they weren't like that on the website. And if you don't believe me, go over to the 2600 website right now and look at the mirror image that we have posted on there. You'll see for yourself. I think maybe you can see part of a nipple or something like that, but come on, that's not pornography. Sorry, it just isn't. At least not in my book. Anyway, okay, so they posted pictures of nude women, according to the Daily News, on a weekend when the site was receiving record traffic. Times technicians reposted the site more than once, only to see the hackers overlay the pornographic pictures. Here we go. Finally, the paper pulled the plug for the day. The cyber outlaws also posted a manifesto ranting against the Times' technology correspondent John Markoff and calling for the release of incarcerated hacker Kevin Mitnick. Markoff co-authored a book about the 1995 capture of the hacker who broke into the computer systems of such companies as Motorola and Fujitsu, and this reporter apparently has never heard of the word allegedly. Mitnick also was arrested in 1983 for breaking into a Pentagon computer network, the prototype of today's internet. Yeah, people look kind of surprised. You didn't know that, did you? Oh. Hang your head in shame. You didn't know that little fact about Kevin Mitnick, that he was arrested in 1983 for breaking into the Pentagon. It's pretty unbelievable, isn't it? Well, you know, the reason it's unbelievable is because it never happened. Never happened. I mean, this is just unbelievable how the papers are able to spread nonsense around with absolutely no basis in reality. No basis at all. That was written by Bill Egbert. He's the convicted dog rapist, isn't he? I've heard of him. Yeah, no, this guy was convicted of raping dogs all over his neighborhood. I can't tell you how I know this, but that's what I heard. So I'm going to go around telling everybody that's what it is. I mean, this guy has absolutely no basis in reality for saying Kevin Mitnick broke into the Pentagon in 1983, yet he puts it into a newspaper story. So from this point on, Bill Egbert, that's what you're going to be known as, the Daily News. Call the Daily News. Ask them how they can hire people like this. I don't mean the dog rapist part. I mean the reporting part, how they can hire people like that. Well, speaking of reporting, speaking of good reporting, we have a real reporter on the line with us. You may have heard the name Simpson Garfinkel, reporter for the Boston Globe, author of several technology books. Simpson, are you still with us up there in Boston?
I'm here.
I'm sorry if I went on too long there. We had you on hold the whole time. Quite a story. Quite a story this weekend, isn't it?
I can barely hear you. Can you turn up the volume?
You know, I don't think there's any way to turn up the volume, but I've been hearing complaints all day about this. How bad is it? Can you make me out at all?
Yeah, you're like a 2 on the scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people say. But I don't think there's any way we can get you any better than this.
Okay.
So hopefully, I'll try to talk loud without overmodulating. So now, were you able to hear what we were talking about?
Oh, yes, I heard it all.
Okay. When did you become aware of what was going on with the Times?
Well, you know, I feel that I sort of missed out on it because I was walking around a supermarket and my cell phone rang. And it was a reporter from Ziff Davis, from ZD Online, who wanted some quotes from me about what had happened. And I first had to be briefed on what had happened. The surprising thing was how little coverage this hack got in other news media. It got a mention on NPR, and it got a mention on NPR the next day. But on the whole, I think that the implications of this were really severe.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the hackers, instead of just putting up their black pages, they could have put up a fictitious New York Times, which looked like a regular New York Times, but had new articles in it.
That's definitely true. You see, here's the thing. A lot of people that hack web pages haven't really thought out the site that they want to hack, and they don't have it prepared in advance. So basically what they wind up putting on is kind of, you know, a spur-of-the-moment type of a thing, or maybe even a copy of something that was put up before someplace else.
I'm always very surprised at it. In my book, Web Security and Commerce, we talk about the hack on the Department of Justice website and on the CIA website.
Mm-hmm.
And those are sites where you could have really damaged the character and the faith of the United States government.
Absolutely.
By putting up very interesting pieces of information.
Absolutely. And that kind of thing has been happening over in East Timor, where people have been hacking websites there. And it's been causing quite a bit of controversy because, you know, that's really where political things are happening. People are getting shot for expressing their opinions and things like that. And these websites are being hacked relentlessly over and over again. And the word that is opposed to what the government wants to be put out is being put out instead on their dime. And that's true political action right there, using the net. And I think you're seeing the same thing down in Mexico, too.
The second thing that really surprised me about the New York Times case was the Times saying that they don't know how it happened. I was in a room with a friend who was reading the web, and he gave me a very detailed description of how it happened just by looking at publicly available websites. So I don't understand why the folks at the New York Times don't have access to those same websites.
Well, it's interesting. I think they're kind of holding back on some information there, which is, you know, kind of weird, being a newspaper, that you'd suppress information. But since they can't do it, let's do it for them. What are some of the theories being bandied about as far as how this actually took place?
Allegedly, the penetration happened using the Times website was running on a computer running the Unix operating system, and they were running an unsecure service called StatD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about 6 months ago, a vulnerability in the StatD program was widely circulated. And allegedly, that's what the attackers used to get access.
Sounds simple enough.
It sounds simple enough. In the on National Public Radio this morning, John McChesney reported that 2 years ago, the New York Times, we have a second phone line in the house, and that's my wife's line.
Ah.
Allegedly, the New York Times had been audited by Bellcor 2 years ago, and Bellcor at the time said it was the most secure site they had ever audited, but that was 2 years ago, and things move fast.
That's right. You got to keep up with the times. Keep up with the exploits. You know,
it's surprising it hadn't been audited since. The thing that we found surprising was that they were running any services on their website,
uh-huh,
other than their web server. Because strictly speaking, from a security point of view, that's not really a good idea.
Right.
The interview that they did Sunday night with National Public Radio said how the system administrators at the Times detected the change, they changed the page back, and then a few moments later, it was changed back to the hacker page.
Right.
And this went back and forth and back and forth.
Tug of war.
The hackers had access to their computer, and they finally pulled the plug.
Uh-huh.
But in the file itself, the hackers say that they had hacked the cron tab, and that's a list of programs that get run automatically on a regular basis. So it seems that the hackers had just left a program that copied over the page into the publishing directory.
Well, my understanding from what I got from them, because they sent a few people mail when they did this, my understanding was that the New York Times had something funky going on in their cron tab, and perhaps that was overriding the efforts of the hackers until they found out how they were doing that, and then they went in and sort of fixed the cron tab to do what they wanted it to do.
That's
my theory.
I'm not involved with these hackers in any way, so I certainly don't know the actual story.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you were quoted in a story on Excite. www.excite.com is where I found this. And basically there you said that many people don't understand the importance of having secure computers all the time. The people really at fault are the people who manufacture software that run their servers. Now, I guess you've probably gotten a bit of heat for saying something like that.
You're fading out. But I believe that Gene Spafford and I, Gene's my co-author on the Practical Unix and Internet Security book, for a long time we've been saying that manufacturers need to be held responsible for security flaws in their products. Right now when you run a program, before you can run it, there's a shrink-wrap software license that comes up that basically says, if we delete all the data on your computer, we're not responsible. And if you lose important information because of the running of this software, we're not responsible. And if they give you a guarantee at all, the guarantee is for the replacement cost of the floppy disk or the CD-ROM that the program came on. And we think that computers are extremely important in the current running of the American economy and the world economy, mm-hmm. and the people who make these machines should be held liable for the work that they create.
Right. I mean, at the same time, these same people will say, well, if you do something, hack a website, you should go to prison for 5 years or something like that. So they're treating it like it's something really incredibly valuable, but they don't want to take responsibility for something that valuable. They're saying, oh, it's only a CD-ROM. It's only the media that it comes on. That's all we're going to take responsibility for. So it seems rather two-sided there.
It's very troubling that that the companies will not stand behind their products.
Mm-hmm. As far as getting the message out about Kevin, do you think this was a useful way of spreading the information?
You know, I think it gets the message out to the people who already know the message, but I think that it's probably the wrong way to get the message out to the general public, because it looks like a fairly destructive, vandalizing act. And another way of doing it might be going through channels and placing op-eds and writing letters and really trying to make their case. I know a lot of hackers don't believe in the system, and they try to bypass the system. But this may be one case where a positive PR spin rather than a vigilante attack might be better received. Because
mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of very important issues in the Mitnick case, and those issues tend to be ignored when the people making the point do so with these means.
I do see your point, but at the same time, I know firsthand the frustration a lot of these people are feeling as far as working within the system, because this system has brought us, you know, books like Takedown and movies and lots of money for the people that exploit the case, and no justice for the people that actually are waiting to have their side heard. I mean, you know, 3.5 years in prison before a trial for something of this nature is insane. Most people seem to realize that. But even with that realization, nothing's happening. You know, we're getting the word out. A lot of people are finding out about it. Everyone's angry, but he's still in prison, and there is no word as to when he can ever hope to get out. So, that's frustration right there. You feel like the system isn't really going to work for you.
You know the story on that? The people have told me that Mitnick's lawyers waived the right to the speedy trial.
Yeah, and most people that wind up in prison waive that right because the alternative is to go to trial immediately without having an opportunity to look at any evidence whatsoever. I think if Kevin had known what they had in for him at the outset, he never would have agreed to that. But who has the benefit of that? That's something that a lot of people don't realize. Yeah, he waived the right to a speedy trial, but that does not mean he said, okay, yeah, keep me in prison 4 years before you manage to bring me up on charges. It's not really what he had in mind.
It is troubling.
Very, yeah. I don't know if any damage was done to the actual site. What's your opinion on that? Do you think they did something damaging or just hurt their pride?
You know, I don't have any way of knowing if there was any damage done. I also don't know if the site is within the newspaper's internal network or not. The New York Times hasn't released any information along those lines, and I don't expect them to.
Uh-huh. It seems to get up to Alternate. When I do a trace route to it, it seems to get up to Alternate, and then there's some kind of a firewall there, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was that way before it got hacked, though. It might have been a lot different.
Well, the New York Times was a target, and they've known that.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are targets should take extraordinary precautions.
And not be surprised when something like this happens. I mean, that's something that I really, you know, I find that very hard to believe, that they actually are shocked and surprised by this. I mean, people are not afforded the opportunity to express themselves in lots of ways. And, you know, the New York Times has no obligation to print everybody's viewpoint because, it, unlike the public airwaves, printing presses are owned by corporations and they don't belong to everybody. But by the same token, people are going to feel frustration by that, and they're going to try and use graffiti art attempts to get their word out, and it should be viewed as such. You know, there is a legitimate message that is being conveyed here. If someone just went in there and just erased everything and destroyed things with the obvious intention of causing damage, that would be a completely different thing. But it's obvious that these people were trying to communicate something, and I think they should be listened to, and I think the security holes they found should be looked at as well. Now, the New York Times, you know, I'm looking at some quotes from them. This is a very serious crime. Once the hackers are identified, we will prosecute them to the full extent of the law, said Arthur Sulzberger Jr., publisher of the Times. Sounds like they're just after vengeance, you know? I mean...
Well, it is a very serious crime.
It's a serious crime, but it's not a serious crime like, you know, rape and murder and the real serious crimes out there. This is something... It's a prank. It really is a prank, and it's easily recovered from... It's a black eye to their integrity. Okay, you learn from it and you move on. What's going to be gained here from pursuing these people and locking? I guess somebody's going to write another book about this and maybe make another movie. So someone's going to gain something, but I don't think it's going to be the people that did this. I don't think it's going to be me or you.
It's interesting that all of these website hacks have been against high profile sites that were not doing really commerce.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen or heard about these hacks against bank sites or against sites that are online brokerage houses.
Uh-huh.
If this had happened against E-Trade, the online stock brokerage, I think there would be a lot more people concerned.
Yeah. You'll see some things hitting fans at that point when that happens, and it probably will happen at some point. But we also have a statement from Kevin's lawyer, press release actually came out yesterday. Kevin Mitnick appreciates the support and good wishes of those who speak out against his continued state of incarceration for years without bail. However, he does not encourage any individuals to engage in hacking pranks on his behalf. Kevin believes other avenues exist that can be more beneficial to his circumstances. See www.kevinmitnick.com. Signed, Donald C. Randolph, Randolph and Levanis, Attorneys at Law. Like I said before, it brought a lot of people to the website that might not have been there before, and they may have learned something. I was reading some feedback on various forums. I think it was MSNBC. Yeah, MSNBC has a BBS that they're running. And basically, this person was one of the people who was a link on the website. He runs an anti-Scientology website. I guess these people had something in for them as well because they put his link there too. I am the creator of one of the pages that was linked from the New York Times hacked page, www.scientology-kills.net. In the hours following the hack, I received more than 3,000 hits to my page and tons of email. Needless to say, this rather baffled me, and it wasn't until someone mentioned the hack in an email to me that I first became aware of it. Also included among the links on the page was another link to Scientology critical information. I'm not quite sure what to think of this. In one sense, I'm thankful for the increased exposure that they've given to the Scientology criticism taking place on the net, and in another sense, I question the methods. Perhaps their causes are worthwhile. Kevin Mitnick's situation is an injustice. Throwing every other reason aside, the fact that he spent over 3 years in jail without trial alone is outrageous beyond words. As for the publicity provided to my page as a result of this, I wouldn't have asked for it, but I'll accept it with a smile and a slightly confused shrug. So that person definitely feeling the effects of the hack. And also, I'm finding a lot of the people that are commenting on this are aware of the Kevin Mitnick case, and I think that's really good. They're saying, okay, this is an injustice. This should be focused on. And I have to say, today alone, I got an excess of 5 phone calls from reporters interested in the Kevin Mitnick case. This did not happen last week. Didn't happen last month. People weren't interested. Now all of a sudden, it's thrust in their faces, and they're interested. Everyone's talking about the demonstration outside Miramax, like it was this big, massive 1968 Democratic Convention thing. But it was 24 of us, you know, from the radio station, from the city, from the 2600 meetings that just went down there and showed our opinion and you know, made our opinions vocal. And it's being looked at now, months later, as something really significant. And we knew back then it was significant, but it's nice to see it get some recognition. Here's another bit of feedback from MSNBC. This is in response to people that called the website hackers idiots. This person said, you missed something, check the source. I wouldn't be so quick to brand them idiots. If you look at the source code, and you can do this on the 2600 site too, in the mirror of the hacked page, you'll see that they speak in normal English. You know, you might think by looking at the actual web page that they're incapable of speaking in anything but all caps and numbers, but that's just, I don't know how to describe that. It's just, you know, a colloquialism or something. They speak in real English if you look at the page source. If you, in Netscape, just click on View and look at page source, and you'll see that there's actual real commentary going on there, along with all kinds of quotes from those hackers named Voltaire and Tennyson and Milton and people like that. Just because hackers can't, as a general rule, spell doesn't mean that they are stupid. I'd like to see you, the person who commented before this, take down the New York Times. You have to understand that most of these people don't give a rat's ass about what you think about their spelling. Sometimes I question their use of text that is so difficult to read. People often miss their message because of it. However, if you are willing to look, the message is there. Hackers only really want freedom. Freedom from large corporations and governments mainly, but also freedom of speech, freedom of action, and freedom of information. They hate injustice and greed. They don't want to destroy, but to explore and communicate. Truly, are their goals any different from our own? Was there any permanent damage to the New York Times site? All HFG wanted to do was grab a few minutes of airtime to express their opinions and have a little bit of fun doing it. For those of you who may have missed the message or messages, I would like to repeat what seems to be the primary reason for the attack. Kevin Mitnick, an admitted hacker, has been in prison since 1995 without a trial or even a bail hearing for quote-unquote crimes that, not done using a computer, would seem petty and would probably be dismissed. However, the federal government has decided to drag Mitnick's name through the mud and make an example of him to discourage others. Since then, he has become a sort of folk hero, and many hackers support his efforts to clear his name. For more information, www.kevinmitnick.com is a good place to start, along with news and background information. They also have a counter that records how long Kevin has been unfairly imprisoned. As of this writing, it stands at over 3 years, 6 months, 26 days, 10 hours, 31 minutes, 48 seconds. Actually, it's gone over 3 years, 7 months by now. Believe it or not, hackers have feelings, too. And really intelligent posts like this I'm seeing on the feedback sections where people are actually aware of the issues, and they're not just going to the usual lock the hackers up, they're the biggest threat to society, you know, since Attila the Hun. I'm glad to see people are thinking this through and realizing, hey, there are two sides to every story, and actually reading the information. Kind of surprised by it, to tell you the truth, but it's good to see. Simpson, you want to stay with us for some phone calls?
Oh, I'd like that a lot.
Okay. We're at 212-209-2900. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight. We're talking about the New York Times hack on Sunday. The New York Times webpage was brought down to its knees by a bunch of hackers called HFG that were spreading the news about Kevin Mitnick, among some other things as well. But Kevin Mitnick was the main topic. And I think they really succeeded in getting the word out in ways that I don't think we were able to do. And that's got to tell you something. Here we have a 50,000-watt radio station. We've got a magazine that has, you know, tons of distribution throughout bookstores in the country. And we've had demonstrations and bumper stickers and things like that. But I think this one action, this one thing that happened on Sunday, got more attention in that one shot than anything that we've done before this. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a cumulative effect. Maybe we've gotten to more people. But it just feels, maybe because it's hitting us all at once, that they really got through to a lot of people. And, you know, maybe there are other ways of doing this, of getting the word out, of spreading information that won't result in federal indictments. I don't know. If people have ideas, please let us know. 212-209-2900. Let's take our first phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, the Kevin Mitnick site was hacked. Did you know that?
Goodbye. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. Okay. The New York Times wants to prosecute and convict the people who hacked the website. Well, here's a challenge. It goes out to John Markoff and to Shimon Shimomura. Go track them down. If you're as good as you say you people are, Shimomura and Markoff, go find them. Markoff, of all people, should take this personally to heart, considering part of that page was directed towards him. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling. And, you know, I understand Shimomura's beeper has gone off. He's canceled a ski trip. which is really pissing him off no end, and he's right now on a plane heading for some unknown town, and nobody knows what he's going to do there, but he's already writing down what he ate on the plane, so I think the second book is almost
done. John Markoff was quoted in National Public Radio this morning saying that he believed he knew the identities of the people who had done this, and he had given that information to the FBI.
Now, do you think the FBI really needs to be involved in this? What's going to come out of that? It's not going to unhack their site.
That's a very good question. I think that overall the FBI is extremely concerned about the threats to the national computer infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And when there is a high-profile situation like this, there's a lot of interest in getting involved. At the same time, I know that they're very overextended. And I was recently told that there are a lot of cases that they're just not following up because they don't have the time or the manpower. It's hard to understand or hard to know where this will fall.
Right. All right, let's take another listener phone call, 212-209-2900. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
How you doing?
I actually kind of have a legal question. Do you care if I, ask you?
Is it related to the thing on Sunday?
Well, actually, it's kind of like slanted journalism. Same thing happened to me and my friend. That kind of happened. You know how they're blowing the whole article out of proportion?
Right.
Me and my friend, we got in trouble for harassment, right, through prank phone calls, which mm-hmm. was kind of, a little stupid.
Prank phone calls?
How you kind of said about...
Prank phone? How old are you?
I'm actually 17.
17
they want to try us as adults for terrorism.
It's the kind of thing that 17-year-olds do. What do you think about that,
Yeah,
prank
exactly.
Phone calls.
We actually got the article sitting right here, and the thing is, we uploaded it and stuff on the web, I can give you an address if you want to see it, but the thing is, it's so wrong. The guy... that interviewed me and my friend.
Uh-huh.
It's not even the guy that did the article.
Yeah.
What was the newspaper that printed this?
It was actually The Record.
Mm-hmm. The Bergen County.
It was in Saturday's paper under the title Law and Order.
What record is this? Since you could be calling from anywhere in the world.
Oh, this New Jersey.
New Jersey.
The Bergen County Record.
Yeah, Bergen County.
It's a good newspaper.
So Law and Order: 4 juveniles arrested over terrorizing phone calls.
They put your name in.
What?
Did they put your name in?
No, they didn't. But the thing is,
How do you know that you're the person who they're writing about?
Yes, but the thing is, they totally distorted everything that was said.
But maybe they were writing about another set of juveniles.
No, it was us. They described in detail. They didn't say our names because we're underage. But what they had said was everything that we had told the cops. They basically summed it up nicely and changed it around to fit the article.
Well, mm-hmm. Normally that stuff comes from the police reports, and if they didn't put your name in, you're lucky, and nobody knows it was you, so don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Well, I think what the caller is upset about is the fact that he knows it's them, and he's upset that the facts have been distorted like this. He's not yet aware of how journalism works in some newspapers, where the story is written before they actually talk to the people involved.
We didn't even go to court yet, and that's why I was wondering, not wrong. They can legally do this, just go and make up shit.
Almost certainly the information in that came from the police report. And you really don't have much recourse in the way if you're not identifiable in the story, and you should just be glad that you're not identifiable in the story.
Can you just give us one example of what it is that they distorted specifically?
All right, here's one. All right, just one of the things. We're going to bash your heads in. We're going to kill you. Something that they had in quotes that none of the four people that got in trouble said.
Uh huh. What kinds of things did you say?
I'll just tell you what we kind of said. Me and my friend just called them, goofed on them.
Uh-huh.
One kid had threatened to kill their dog. And that's where we got
that. That's much better than bashing your head in.
Yeah, exactly. But another thing, they said, we know where you live and what time you walk your dog. Now, that was that was in quotes also, like we said that. That was another thing we had never, ever said.
Uh-huh.
Were you calling somebody that you knew?
No, it was just some phone number that this girl had given us.
And they had caller ID or something?
Yeah. Are you guys familiar with the Phone Losers?
Phone Losers of America?
Yes.
No.
No?
No, actually, we've heard of them, yes.
Yeah, it was like that. You know, we went there, we got inspired, we made prank phone calls, we got in trouble, yeah.
Well, okay, but you learned your lesson, you're not going to do this anymore, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and you advise people not to do this kind of thing because it really does get people upset. But yeah, you know, you'll find, you know, I say this, every newspaper report, every TV report that I've been involved in, there's always one thing I can point to that's wrong. You know, they just don't get right. So if you plan on being in the media a lot, you better get used to that. All right?
Thanks.
But try to stay out of the media. Thanks for calling. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
How you doing?
Okay, how you doing? I can hear how you doing.
Oh, we're doing just great.
The FCC and appointed agencies, they come down on someone, it's more like a citizen's arrest because they really don't have law power or legal power, in a sense, do they?
They usually bring federal marshals with them when they, if you're talking about raiding like a private radio station or something like that, that's how they actually go and get physical.
But who makes, you know, the law process is a voted upon thing, isn't it? It's not really, how do they compare to the judicial or criminal? It's really not in there.
Right, well, the FCC commissioner is appointed.
Right.
It's definitely not elected. And, you know, that's a good point. There is not much public say in important things. And the important things that the FCC is involved in right now is micro-broadcasting and indecency on the air, two policies which are really stifling freedom of speech like you would not believe.
What I'm getting at is, can't we attack them on, when I say attack, you know, don't take it the wrong way, of course, but, for example, the Environmental Control Board, if you don't pay the fine, In their notice to you, they say that if you don't pay this fine, we will file against you in a civil court.
Okay.
So that means they're not really a court, but yet you go through this mock trial. There's really no justice there. I mean, what happened to anything that amounts to more than $20? You have a right to a trial by jury. What happened to the whole system that we are supposedly operating under?
Mm-hmm. I'm not well versed enough in the legalities and technicalities to be able to say exactly. Simpson, do you have any insight into this?
Well, you have to understand that the FCC is part of the executive branch, and when Congress passes laws, they usually leave the implementation of those laws up to particular federal agencies. So the agencies write regulations that spell out more details in the laws, and micro-broadcasting might fall under that. And then violation of regulations can be criminal or it can be civil, and there are usually advantages or disadvantages to each venue. And if you have a violation of regulations and you're taken to civil court, you might owe money, but you won't go to jail, whereas the stakes are usually higher in a criminal court.
What is this fellow in jail for 3 years for? What are they charging? That you say that he hasn't been charged?
No, he's been charged. He has not come to trial.
What was he charged with?
He's charged with, what was it specifically? It was probation violations?
Violating the terms of previous parole.
Parole violations.
He's been charged with possession of access devices.
Right, which could be anything from passwords to credit card numbers to cellular phone information. It could be virtually anything.
So I believe he's been charged with cellular telephone fraud.
Uh-huh. Well, he pleaded guilty to cellular telephone fraud in North mm-hmm. Carolina and already served his sentence for that. So that's pretty much it. There's not a whole lot there. And if you look at the indictment, the whole thing is posted on the website. So you can see for yourself just what it is he's charged with. And you'll be amazed. Why is this guy in prison so long? It's just because of computers, just because of technology. It's just wrong. That's the only way I could say it. Anyway, thanks for the call. We're going to move on. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yes, speak up, please.
Oh, this is Sandra.
How you doing?
Hi. I'm just wondering, you've had, like, other people...
Got to turn down your radio, Sandra.
All right.
Okay. Speak up a bit.
Other people's opinions...
Now, see, your radio's not down, because I can still hear it.
Now can you hear me?
Okay, yes, that's fine.
You've had other people's opinions of the hack.
Okay.
The New York Times website, but you haven't said your opinion.
I think we've expressed our opinion, haven't we? I mean, I'm saying basically that, you know, that's a fairly effective way of getting the word out. Honestly, speaking personally, I'm kind of glad it happened because it might wake people up that, hey, there's other views out there and you'd better start paying attention to them. You know, they're valid views. And I think what will make it valid in the eyes of the Times and other media outlets is the public's reaction to this. If the public starts taking more of an interest in the issues that were pointed out, then they'll say, hey, we missed the boat on this, and maybe we are somewhat culpable for the way this whole thing panned out in the first place, and boy, we better not let that happen again. Maybe that'll happen. You know, of course, if the public comes down on hackers and wants to throw us all in prison, well, then, of course, they'll take that route. So I guess it's really in the hands of the public right now.
Okay.
All right?
That's what I wanted to ask.
Okay, thanks for calling. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I want to comment about this, but first, one brief thing about the 2600 telephone directory. I called it the other day to leave a message about two things on last week's show, and I wanted to leave you voicemail, and I pressed Goldstein and Goldstein, and there was no one there with that name, so is it broken or what?
We got the message, so it got through eventually.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not the best system in the world. If anybody out there has a good voicemail system, please.
I'm surprised, you of all people, but I guess, you know.
It's just we're so busy, you know, we have barely enough time to plug in a phone.
I guess, like, you know, physician, heal thyself. Just briefly on the case. That reporter from the Daily News, what was his last name? Egbert?
The dog rapist? Hang on, I got to find that one.
Well, I think, like, everyone should fax to the Daily News the Voice of the People column, where they publish, like, a very small, limited, one-paragraph letter to the editor. If everyone listening right now were to fax them a letter to the editor and, you know, point it at, and maybe one or two of the letters will get in their Voice of the People column. If everyone listening now with a fax machine does that.
Bill Egbert. It's like Dilbert, but egg instead of
Yeah, that's
Dill.
What came to mind. I think everyone should fax a letter to the editor pointing that at. And also, but like, they shouldn't do anything like, you know, harassing him or tailing him or making his life miserable. Just like, fax or write a letter to the editor, because believe it or not, I even had a letter to the editor in Saturday's paper. And the last thing is
we can find out who you are.
Huh?
We can find out who you really are this way.
Oh, I mean, you know, I have CIA agents up my wazoo, but a question for your guest. You work, I take it, for a mainstream commercial publication in Boston?
Well, I'm a columnist in the Boston Globe. I put out a column once a week called Simpson Says.
Okay, and I'd like to know, what is the environment there? Because you weren't listening to the show before this, but they were talking about the connection with the CIA and the media, and the famous quote by Katharine Graham that there are certain things the government does that people shouldn't know. And do you have sort of any direct experience with editors or the powers that be?
No, I've never had a CIA agent visit me.
No, I mean, just in terms of telling you editorially what you can or can't do, what you have basically carte blanche to take even like an unpopular perspective or opinion.
You ever get leaned on by people in the parking lot?
No, I never get leaned on by anybody.
Okay.
Well,
except my readers.
You won't get in trouble for being on this radio show.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't know this radio show.
I'll tell you that there is one thing that gets me in a lot of trouble.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I write good things about Microsoft,
uh-oh,
I get a ton of people writing me mail and accusing me of taking money from Microsoft.
Well, on this radio station, they call them Micro Satan. But anyway, thanks for entertaining my call. Bye.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for entertaining us. Well, I guess, you know, you're allowed. You're one fault there if you want to say nice things about Microsoft, because you've said a lot of good things about other things. So, I'm joking, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. The FCC, it's true what the caller was saying. They don't do the arresting, but in case of, for example, like Napoleon Williams, Black Liberation Radio, the DA came and they arrest the equipment.
Right.
Which is silly. But also, I think you said a very, very important thing, the fact that they're just trying to get their message across and they were not doing anything to harm people. And I think, you know, that people like the Times may not even see that. They actually might not even realize that because they're so intent on saying, oh, hacking is this horrendous sin.
They're looking at this in the corporate, they're looking at this in the corporate view and not at the actual message. Yes.
Right. It's just that they didn't do anything wrong. And I think also a commercial advertiser should sponsor Kevin. They should just track how many, if you could track how many sites were linked, that, you know, that person that said they had like 3,000 replies,
mm-hmm.
you could get a commercial sponsor for Kevin. Serious.
That would be interesting. That would be
Capital
very interesting.
Site. Might as well make, you know, get him a lawyer with it. You know, get him the money for a lawyer.
Well, that's the primary thing right now, is to raise money for a lawyer. And if you want to donate to the Mitnick Defense Fund, all the information is right there on the www.kevinmitnick.com site. And, of course, it is spelled KevinMitnick. One word, no dash, no period or anything like that. Let's take one more phone call since we have a little bit of time. Good evening. You're on the air. Okay, let's take one that doesn't sound quite so bad. Good evening, you're on the air. And one that maybe sounds a little louder than that. Good evening, you're on the air. Okay, maybe not that sound either. We're just going through them all. Okay, you're the last chance. Good evening.
Hey.
How you doing?
How's it going? This is Telefreak.
Telefreak, how are
you? I
was
just wondering if you heard about the Fox News report on Kevin on the site.
Tell us quickly. We have about 30 seconds.
Well, they claimed that the reason they attacked it was because Kevin Mitnick was their leader, and they were doing it because of him.
I heard about this. This was on the local Fox station here in New York?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so that would be WMYW Channel 5.
Kevin Mitnick is their leader?
Yeah, that's exactly what they said. They were like, they placed a calling card to their leader, Kevin Mitnick. That's what the hackers did, they said.
I thought he was pretty much of a lone operator.
He definitely is not a leader, and he wasn't in any groups like that. This is exactly the kind of thing I was mentioning, though, is that the press gets these like fundamental facts wrong, and this turns out to be a very big one.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they did this.
Well, imagine what people watching Channel 5 News would think seeing that.
They think Kevin Mitnick is this big terrorist.
Yeah, it's John Gotti sitting in prison there commanding people to hack websites at will. It's, you know, that definitely gets the wrong impression, of course,
exactly.
Because Kevin is very upset at these things, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a lot more upset than I am, obviously, because I can sort of see the humor, I can see the good in this. He only sees the bad in it because that's all he's going to feel.
Yeah.
He's going to get blamed by idiots at Fox. So I guess the best way to do that is apply pressure to Fox if a lot of people contact them and say, hey, guys, you got this wrong.
Yes.
Of course, they're not going to go on the news and say, oh, we made a mistake. Kevin Mitnick really isn't the leader.
A couple of people from the Mitnick mailing list actually sent a Fox News mail, including myself, saying, like, I don't know, I'm planning on emailing every email address I find at foxnews.com saying to post an apology or something.
Have you gotten a single reply yet?
I've gotten the standard, oh, yeah, we'll send this to blah, blah, blah. By the way, we're sending you a free gift, blah, blah, blah.
See, people wonder why their sites get hacked.
This is
why, right here. Thanks very much for calling
great
in.
Show.
All right. Simpson, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. Simpson
Garfinkel, thank you for having me.
Columnist for the Boston Globe. And what are some of the books you've authored?
Well, we have a new book coming out in a few weeks called Stopping Spam. It's going to be published by Riley & Associates, and the first quarter of it is all about the history of spam, and the rest of it is how to protect yourself from unwanted junk mail.
Sounds good. Do you have an email address you want to give out?
Well, I have a website, actually.
Okay,
it's Simpson.net.
Simpson.net?
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad.
S-I-M-S-O-N, period, N-E-T. And if you click there, you'll be able to find all the articles I've ever written.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for joining us. Best of luck in the future. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. We'll be back again next week with more updates on this story and all the other ones that haven't happened yet. Till then, have a good night.
Now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But they live on.
Hi, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz, host of Arab Voices Crescent Rising. That's our weekly magazine here on WBAI featuring Arab and Muslim peoples and issues here in the United States and overseas. We're on every Tuesday evening at 9 p.m., so why don't you join us? That's Ibrahim Gonzalez, Anissa Bouzian, Hussein Ibish, myself, and other members of our team. Tuesdays from 9 to 10 p.m., here on WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-sponsored radio in New York. Hi, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz, host of Arab Voices Crescent Rising.
And the time is 9:01. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties here before finding the theme music to Tahrir, and that's coming up right now. I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz, executive producer of Tahrir, which is a magazine program heard every week here on WBAI from 9 o'clock right through to 10 o'clock. And today's show, we are going to be talking to Hussein Ibish, our regular commentator from Amherst, Massachusetts. And we will also, well, we'll be talking to him about particularly Iran and the growing tension between Iran and Afghanistan. Perhaps some of you have been